Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really plunging into the fascinating linguistic history of the Kurdish people.
We are. You've shared an incredible stack of sources. And yeah, we've pulled out what we think are the most compelling nuggets about their languages, both spoken and written.
Exactly. The idea is to give everyone a clear, but still really engaging understanding of this pretty complex linguistic picture without, you know, getting bogged down in too much detail.
That's the plan. And what's immediately interesting is realizing that Kurdish isn't just one single thing.
Right. Not monolithic at all.
No. It's much better to think of it as a dialect continuum, sort of a flow of related ways of speaking across Kurdistan.
And that historical region, Kurdistan, cuts across modern borders, doesn't it? Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Syria.
Precisely. And you also find historical Kurdish communities in places like Khorasan, way over in eastern Iran, and up in the Caucasus.
Okay, so this idea of a dialect continuum, like, imagine walking across Kurdistan. Your neighbors speak very similarly.
Yeah, probably very easy to understand each other.
But the further you go,
the more the differences pile up. Pronunciation, grammar, even basic words. Eventually, it could get genuinely difficult to communicate.
Got it. So this internal diversity in spoken Kurdish, how does that play against their history of writing? Because you mentioned something interesting there.
It creates this really intriguing tension. Because for a long, long time, especially before, say, the 20th century, when Kurdish elites needed to write formally.
For literature or administration.
Both, yeah. And scholarly work, too. They often used the big prestige languages around them.
Which would be?
Arabic, Persian, and later on, Ottoman Turkish.
So writing in other languages while speaking Kurdish dialects day to day, did that cause issues? Or affect how a specifically Kurdish written tradition developed?
That's exactly what we want to explore. It feels like a core part of the story.
Okay. So our mission for this deep dive, to see what have these spoken languages and written traditions evolved? What shaped them? What were the influences? And where are things now?
Absolutely. And there are some genuinely fascinating threads to pull on.
Like what? Give us a teaser.
Well, for starters, where Kurdish actually fits in the Iranian language family.
Yeah.
It's still debated.
Really?
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
Then there's the whole story of different scripts they've used, Perso-Arabic, Latin, even Cyrillic at one point.
Multiple scripts. Wow.
And maybe the most surprising bit for some listeners, the really significant contributions made by ethnic Kurds who wrote masterpieces, but in Arabic, Persian, or Turkish.
Okay. I'm hooked. This sounds incredibly layered. Where do we even begin unraveling all this?
Logically, let's start with the big picture. The language family tree.
Right.
So Kurdish is Indo-European. That's the massive family, including English, Spanish, Russian, Hindi.
Okay, the really big one.
Within that, it's in the Iranian branch.
Okay.
And generally, linguists classify it as Northwestern Iranian or NWI.
Northwestern Iranian. So it's like a cousin to Persian, but maybe developed in a different part of the family house.
That's a good way to put it. It shares ancestry with Persian, but took a different path. This NWI group also includes languages like Sazaki and Guarani, which we'll definitely come back to, plus others like Balochi.
And that's distinct from Persian's group.
Yes. Persian is the main language in the southwestern Iranian SWI group. So NWI versus SWI is the basic split.
Okay. Got the classification. But you said there's debate. It's not totally settled.
Exactly. While its core features scream NWI, Kurdish also shares a lot of characteristics with SWI languages, especially Persian.
Why is that? Just proximity.
Pretty much. Thousands of years of close contact. Speakers interacting, borrowing words, maybe even grammatical patterns bleeding across.
So languages rubbing off on each other.
Definitely. Because of this heavy SWI influence, some linguists argue Kurdish might be sort of intermediate. Or maybe it was NWI, but got heavily Persianized later on.
That makes sense. Languages aren't static things in bubbles, are they? Especially not in that part of the world.
Not at all. It's always been a linguistic crossroads. And then you have theories trying to connect Kurdish to even older extinct languages.
Older than Persian.
Well, older languages from that area, like Median, an ancient NWI language.
Mm.
Or Parthian, another NWI language from the Middle Iranian period.
How solid is that?
It's speculative. Because we don't have direct written records of those languages evolving into Kurdish. One scholar, Winfer, suggested Kurdish dialects are basically Parthian, but with an older Median layer underneath.
A linguistic layer cake.
Kind of, yeah. And another big name, Richard Fry, even thought Kurdish might have originated further east and moved west.
Wow. So it's definitely not a simple A to B lineage, more like a tangled web.
a tangled web or a braided river, like you said. Migrations, language contact, maybe even groups switching languages entirely.
Mm.
It all feeds into the mix. We lack the smoking gun, the direct textual proof linking it definitively to one specific old or middle Iranian language.
And this linguistic complexity mirrors the history of the Kurdish people themselves, presumably.
Absolutely. Even the name Kurd, the ethnonym, its origins are debated. It pops up more clearly around the 7th century CE with Islamization.
But there are theories linking it further back.
Yeah, speculative links to groups like the Karduchoy mentioned by Xenophon way back in the 4th century BCE or even the ancient Goti. But those are tenuous connections.
Fascinating possibilities, though.
Definitely. And one more piece of the puzzle comes from genetics. Some studies hint that the ancestors of modern Kurds might be indigenous Neolithic farming groups from the northern Fertile Crescent.
So people who were there before Iranian languages arrived.
That's the hypothesis, that these original groups were later linguistically Iranianized by incoming Indo-European speakers. So deep local roots, but a later linguistic overlay.
So the language is Iranian, but the people's ancestry might be even older in the region, a really complex picture.
It is. No single attested old or middle Iranian language can be pointed to as the direct ancestor.
Okay, let's zoom forward a bit then, back to that dialect continuum you mentioned. What are the main branches, the major spoken varieties today?
Generally, we talk about three or four main groups. There's Kurmanji, which is northern Kurdish, then Sarani, central Kurdish, then southern Kurdish, and sometimes Laki is considered separate, sometimes grouped with southern.
And these are points on a spectrum, not rigid boxes. Really.
Exactly. Border areas often blend features. It's fluid.
Okay, tell us about Kurmanji first. You said it's the biggest.
By far. Estimates are around 15 to 20 million speakers.
Where is it spoken mainly?
It covers a huge area. Most of Kurdistan and Turkey and Syria, northern Iraqi Kurdistan, where it's often called Beydini, parts of northwestern and even northeastern Iran, plus those communities in the Caucasus, Armenia, Georgia.
Wow, that's widespread. Any particular historical significance?
Yes, the Kurmanji spoken around Botan near Sizra was historically really important. It formed the basis for the first major school of classical Kurdish poetry.
A literary heartland. And linguistically, what makes Kurmanji distinct?
It tends to keep some older features, like grammatical case nouns changing form based on their function, and grammatical gender. Plus, a really interesting feature called ergativity in past tense verbs.
Ergativity? What's that? Roughly.
It's where the subject of a verb with an object is marked differently than the subject of a verb without one. It's quite different from, say, Persian or English, and marks Kurmanji out.
Interesting. So quite distinct grammar. Now, what about Sarani, Central Kurdish?
Sarani speakers number maybe 6 to 7 million. They're mainly in central and southern Iraqi Kurdistan. Think Sulaymaniyya, Erbil, and across the border in western Iran, in Kurdistan province there.
And its literary history.
Sarani really came into its own as a literary language later, starting in the 19th century. The big moment was the Nali School of Poetry in Sulaymaniyya.
Ah, so a different center of gravity later on.
Exactly. And crucially, Sarani has official status in Iraqi Kurdistan today. It's used in schools, media, government, which gives it a strong formal footing.
And linguistically, how does it compare to Kurmanji? You mentioned differences.
Big differences, yeah. Sarani generally lacks the case distinctions and grammatical gender found in Kurmanji.
Okay, simpler in that sense.
Maybe. And that ergative structure in the past tense. Sarani mostly uses a more straightforward nominative accusative system, like English, where the subject is treated the same way, regardless of the verb having an object. Though some ergative traces can still be found in certain dialects.
So those are pretty significant grammatical divides. What about Southern Kurdish?
Southern Kurdish is spoken mainly in the Kermanshah and Ilan provinces of western Iran and into parts of eastern Iraq, like Khanakin.
And it's also diverse internally.
Very. You have lots of sub-dialects often linked to tribes. Kalhori, Koyavi, Feli, Zangana, Sanjabi. The dialect spoken in Kermanshah city itself is often seen as the most prestigious variety there.
Any unique linguistic features for Southern Kurdish?
Yes. For example, some varieties around Kermanshah don't use the typical imperfective verb markers, those little prefixes that signal ongoing action. That's quite distinctive.
Hmm. And the last one you mentioned was Laki.
Right, Laki. Spoken mainly in Iran, near the Southern Kurdish area, sometimes spilling into Iraq. Its classification's a bit fuzzy.
How so?
Some group it with Southern Kurdish, but many linguists see it as either a separate branch of Kurdish or maybe even transitional towards another Iranian language, Luri.
What makes it distinct?
One key thing is that Laki does have ergativity, like Kurmanji.
Ah, unlike Sorani and some southern varieties.
Exactly. So that aligns grammatically more with the northern and central groups in that specific way.
It really is an intricate linguistic map, and you stressed that these dialect zones don't match modern country borders.
Not at all. That's super important. The lines drawn by politicians in the 20th century cut right across these speech communities.
So Kurmanji speakers in Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Iran.
Sorani speakers in Iraq and Iran. Southern Kurdish and Laki straddling that same border.
And that must have real consequences for the languages.
Huge consequences. For language vitality, standardization efforts, education, media. Speakers of the same dialect might use different scripts, have totally different legal rights for their language depending on the country.
Right. It inherently fragments the language community.
Absolutely. It's made developing unified standards across the board very, very difficult.
Makes sense. Language and politics, always intertwined. Now, you mentioned the Zaza-Gorani question. Who are they?
These are two distinct linguistic groups within the broader Kurdish cultural region. Zazaki speakers are mainly in eastern Turkey. Gorani speakers are found mostly in the Hawraman region on the Iran-Iraq border and some other pockets.
And the question is about their relationship to Kurdish.
Yes. Culturally, many Zaza and Gorani people feel strong ties to Kurds, identify ethnically as Kurdish.
Okay, so culturally connected, but linguistically.
That's where it gets complicated. While older studies sometimes included them under the Kurdish umbrella, the modern linguistic consensus is different.
How so?
Most linguists now classify Zazaki and Gorani as forming a separate branch, or maybe two related branches, within northwestern Iranian. Distinct from the core Kurdish group, Kurmanji, Sorani, Southern, Laki.
Based on what? Sound changes? Grammar?
Both, yeah. Comparative analysis shows they diverged earlier and have some fundamental grammatical differences from Kurdish proper.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Both Zazaki and Gorani actually keep grammatical gender, like Kurmanji.
But unlike Sorani and Southern Kurdish.
Right. But they differ in other key ways, vocabulary, other grammatical points. And generally, they show less influence from southwestern Iranian, from Persian, compared to the main Kurdish dialects.
So mutual understanding between Zaki-Gorani and, say, Sorani might be difficult.
Often quite limited, yes. Linguistically, they are distinct languages.
But many speakers still identify as Kurdish. That's fascinating.
It really is. It shows that language versus dialect isn't just about linguistics. It's tangled up with identity, culture, politics.
So how do people navigate that?
Well, because many speakers do consider themselves part of the Kurdish nation, the term Kurdish is sometimes used in that broader sociocultural sense. To be precise, some linguists use the term Kurdic languages as an umbrella to include Kurdish proper plus Zazaki and Gorani.
Kurdic languages. Okay, that's a useful term. And you mentioned Gorani had historical significance.
Yes, definitely. Before Sorani became the dominant literary language in the 19th century, Gorani was actually a major literary language itself.
Really? Where?
It was the court language of the powerful Ardalan Principality, based in what's now Iranian Kurdistan. A lot of poetry was written in Gorani from the 16th century on.
Wow. And religious use, too.
Yes. Crucially, Gorani is the traditional sacred language of the Arsani faith, the Alehak. Their main religious text, the Kalam-e-Saranjam, is mostly in Gorani.
So high status both secularly and religiously. What about its relationship with Sorani? You said that was debated.
Right. One older idea was that Gorani might be a substratum for Sorani, meaning Gorani speakers shifted to Sorani but left traces of their old language.
Okay.
But a more recent view is that it might be prestige borrowing. When Ardalan and Gorani culture were influential, Sorani speakers might have adopted features from Gorani because it was seen as high status.
Ah, borrowing from the cool kids, linguistically speaking.
Sort of, yeah. The whole Zaza-Gorani situation really highlights how messy the lines between language, dialect, and identity can be.
Absolutely fascinating. It's never simple, is it? Okay, let's shift focus to the written word. You said a widespread, continuous written tradition in core Kurdish dialects came relatively late. Why was that?
For a very long time, Kurdish culture was primarily oral. Epic poems, stories, songs, all transmitted verbally.
Passed down through generations.
Exactly. When formal writing happened, as we mentioned, it was usually in those established prestige languages. Arabic for religion and scholarship, Persian for literature and administration, later Ottoman Turkish.
So it wasn't that Kurdish dialects couldn't be written, it was more about the context.
Precisely. There are claims of very early written Kurdish, but they're shaky.
Like what?
Well, some sources mention Kurdish being written in a Persian-style script back in the 7th century, but we have no surviving texts. Seems unlikely given the dominance of Arabic and Persian then.
Okay. Anything else?
There's a supposed 9th century text, the Shak al-Mustam, that allegedly mentions a Kurdish alphabet. But the text itself is probably not authentic, and no other evidence supports it.
So intriguing hints, but no solid proof from that early on. What's the earliest tangible evidence we have?
It gets a bit clearer later. One Kanali is a short prayer found in a 15th century Armenian manuscript.
A Kurdish prayer in an Armenian book?
Yeah, from the 1430s or 40s. The linguist David McKenzie analyzed it as a very early form of Kurdish, maybe. It's a tiny snippet, but it's something concrete.
A tiny linguistic fossil. But you mentioned Guarani had a more substantial early tradition.
Yes, this is key. As we discussed, Guarani was used for writing much earlier, especially by the Yarsani faith.
Their sacred texts, the Kalame Saranjam.
Exactly, and others. Dating them precisely is hard because they derive from oral traditions, but they're linked to figures from the 14th, 15th centuries.
So written Guarani was definitely happening then.
Yes. For religious and poetic purposes, within communities identifying as Kurdish. We even hear about Guarani poets like Meli Perishan back in the 14th, 15th centuries, predating the big names in Kurmanji literature.
So Guarani stands out early on. What about the Yazidis? They mainly speak Kurmanji, right? Did they write it down early?
Yes. Yazidis speak Kurmanji. And they have their traditional holy books, the Kitab al-Shilwe, Book of Revelation, and the Meshefa Reis, Black Book.
Written in Kurmanji.
The manuscript copies we have are, yes, using the Perso-Arabic script. But, and this is a big but, modern scholars mostly agree these texts, in the form we know them, aren't ancient scriptures.
Oh, so they're later.
Probably later compilations, maybe put together in the 19th or early 20th century, possibly influenced by Western interest. They likely do contain genuine older Yazidi oral traditions, but the books themselves aren't necessarily ancient artifacts.
Okay, so a complex history there, codifying oral traditions later on.
Seems likely. We do have older mentions of Yazidi writings ascribed to Sheikh Adi in the 12th century, but we don't know if they refer to these specific texts. What we do have, definitively, are Yazidi historical documents called Mishurs.
What are those?
They contain things like lists of affiliated tribes, and some date back to the 13th century. So that's clear evidence of some form of writing practice among Yazidis back then.
Okay, so the picture is nuanced. While widespread Kurmanji-Sarani writing came later, we have earlier Guarani texts and Yazidi written materials.
Exactly. It wasn't a complete blank slate before the 16th century. We need to acknowledge these parallel traditions within the wider Kurdish cultural sphere. It gives a richer picture.
Right. So let's get into those main literary traditions that did emerge more strongly from the 16th century onwards, starting with Kurmanji in Botan. Tell us about that school.
Yes, the Botan or Jazira school. Yep. This is the first major, well-documented classical tradition in Kurmanji. It thrived in the Botan region, homeland of a powerful Kurdish emirate, roughly late 16th to 18th centuries.
Who are the key players?
The foundational figure is often seen as Malay Saziri. Lived around 1570-1640, he was heavily influenced by Persian masters like Hafez, wrote a large diwan, a collection of poems, mostly mystical, lyrical stuff, still hugely respected.
Okay, the founder. Who followed?
One of his students was Fikih Tehran, about 1590-1660. He's important because he was apparently the first to use the Manawi form, rhyming couplets, for big narrative poems in Kurdish, wrote epics like Cheksisanan.
So expanding the genres, anyone else?
Mila Hesin Ebate, probably late 17th, early 18th century from nearby Hakkari, famous for his Muluda Kurmanji.
What's that?
A really popular poem celebrating the Prophet Muhammad's birth. It became so widespread, even Yazidis adopted parts into their oral tradition.
Wow, crossing religious lines in the most famous one.
That would have to be Emedi Zani, lit 1650 or 51 to 1707 from the Bayezid region.
What did he write?
His masterpiece is Memezin. It's this long, epic romance, but full of philosophy, too. Often called the Kurdish national epic.
A foundational text for Kurdish identity.
Absolutely. But Zani also wrote something practical. Nubahara Bisukin. It was a rhyming Arabic-Kurdish dictionary for kids. Shows he was thinking about language education even then.
That's really forward-thinking.
Yeah. And there are others, too, like Shirif Zan, Murad Zan. This whole Botan school really set the standard for classical Kurmanji poetry, deeply influenced by Perso-Arabic forms and themes. Memuzin especially had a huge impact.
A real golden age for Kurmanji literature, then. What about Guarani during the same time, 16th, 18th centuries?
Guarani literature was also flourishing then, as we said, tied to the Ardalan court and the Arsani.
Did it use similar poetic forms?
Sometimes, but Guarani poetry often used a native 10-syllable meter, more rooted in local folk traditions. Gave it a different feel from the heavily Persianized Kurmanji styles.
Who were the key Guarani writers?
Figures like Yusuf Yaska, Mustafa Bezerani. Kana Kulbadi is a big name, wrote religious works, and a famous Guarani version of the Persian romance, Shirin Yu Khosro. And we absolutely have to mention Mastura Ardalan, a remarkable woman, poet, and historian from the early 19th century. She wrote in both Guarani and Persian.
Wow. But you said Guarani literature declined later.
Yes. As the Ardalan Principality lost power and Sarani started rising in the 19th century, Guarani's role as a major literary language faded.
A shift in power, a shift in language prestige, which brings us to Sarani and the Nali school.
Exactly. Early 19th century, Sulaymaniyah becomes the new hub. It was the capital of the Baban Principality then. This marks a big geographical shift southwards for major Kurdish literary output.
And Nali is the key figure.
Nali lived roughly 1800 to 1855, is considered the founder. He compiled the first major collection of poems, primarily in Sarani, setting a new standard. His friends Salim and Kurdi were also important early Sarani poets.
So they established Sarani as a literary force. Who came next?
Later in the 19th century, Haji Kadir Koyi became super influential. He wrote powerful poetry with strong patriotic themes. He really pushed for using and modernizing Kurdish, criticizing elites for neglecting it.
More political themes creeping in.
Definitely. And figures like Mawi and Sheikh Reza Talabani continued this tradition, incorporating more nationalist ideas and social commentary. The Nali school really marks a turn towards using the Sarani vernacular for contemporary concerns.
It really sounds like these literary flowerings were linked to periods of Kurdish autonomy, the principalities.
Absolutely. The patronage of the emirs of Bhutan, Ardalan, Baban, having educated elites in place, it created the space for these vernacular literatures to bloom, even while they borrowed heavily from the wider Perso-Arabic culture.
And when those principalities weakened?
Centralization by the Ottomans and Persians likely contributed to shifts and the continued dominance of the imperial languages in many areas.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, we've covered the dialects and literary traditions. What about the actual scripts used to write Kurdish? You mentioned several.
Yes, it's quite a mix, reflecting the different political and cultural contexts. The oldest and most widespread is the Perso-Arabic script.
Adopted from Arabic via Persian.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe as early as the 7th century. Yeah. Though widespread use came later. It was standard for classical Kurmanji and Guarani. And it's still the main script for Sarani and Southern Kurdish in Iraq and Iran.
Has it been adapted at all?
Yes, significantly for Sarani. In the 1920s, intellectuals like Saeed Gaban Sidki and Tawfiq Wabi modified it to better represent Kurdish vowels. This Sarani alphabet, or Kurdo-Arabic script, functions much more like a true alphabet now.
Okay, the traditional script updated. What about Latin? That's common now too, right?
Very common, but especially for Kurmanji. The main Latin-based system is the Hawar alphabet.
Hawar.
Named after the journal Hawar, The Cry, published in Damascus in the 1930s. It was developed by Kurdish intellectuals in exile, led by Saladet Ali Bedirksen, with help from the French scholar Roger Liscott.
Why Latin? Was it influenced by Turkey's script reform?
Partly that, yes. And a desire for a script that matched Kurdish sounds better. The Hawar alphabet has 31 letters, uses accents and cedillas for specific Kurdish sounds. It's designed to be pretty phonemic.
One letter, one sound, basically.
Mostly, yeah. Makes it quite practical. Today, it's standard for Kurmanji in Turkey and Syria, and widely used by the diaspora and online. For all dialects, really. There's even talk of a unified Latin alphabet for everyone.
Seems like a practical move, especially digitally. You also mentioned Cyrillic and Armenian.
Right. For Kurds in the Soviet Union, mostly Kurmanji speakers in Armenia, a Cyrillic script was created in 1946 by Hesias Indi. It had 40 letters.
And used for?
Publications, education for Soviet Kurds. But before that, for a short time in the 1920s, 1921, 1929, they actually used a modified Armenian script for Kurmanji in Soviet Armenia.
Wow, Armenian script. That's unexpected. And lastly, the Yazidi script.
Yeah, their own unique script. Origins are a bit obscure, maybe 13th century, maybe older. Oldest manuscripts using it are 17th century.
Used for religious texts.
Historically, yes, in Kurmanji. Yes. Not super widely used, though, but interestingly, there are efforts now, especially among Yazidis in Georgia, to revive and standardize it.
So, Perso-Arabic, Latin, Cyrillic, Armenian, Yazidi. Quite a collection.
It really shows how fragmented the Kurdish experience has been, politically and geographically. state policies and regional influences dictated script use.
The choice of script itself becomes political.
Often, yes. It signifies different affiliations, different histories.
Okay. Now, going back to something we touched on earlier, for centuries, many Kurdish intellectuals wrote not in Kurdish, but in Arabic, Persian, or Turkish. Why was that so prevalent for so long?
It's a really central part of the story. Even when Kurdish principalities had some autonomy, the default for high-level writing often wasn't Kurdish.
Why?
Several big reasons. Arabic had huge religious prestige language of the Quran, Islamic law, scholarship, essential for the ulema.
Makes sense.
Persian had this incredibly rich, influential literary tradition, poetry, history, plus it was often used in administration across the region, high culture.
Right.
And then Ottoman Turkish increasingly became the language of the state, administration, and a growing literary scene for centuries, covering most Kurdish areas.
So the gravity of these established languages was immense.
Huge. Writing in Arabic, Persian, or Turkish gave Kurdish elites access. Access to wider audiences, intellectual debates, political power, status. Things writing in less standardized, non-official Kurdish vernaculars just couldn't offer at the time.
Were people aware of this? Did anyone comment on it?
Oh, yes. The Ottoman writer Şamsaddin Sami noted in the late 19th century how educated Kurds mastered Arabic and Persian, but often neglected their own tongue.
Any examples?
A classic one is Sheikh Marifi Nod Barzinji, an 18th century scholar, wrote tons in Arabic and Persian, his only work related to Kurdish, a small Arabic-Kurdish glossary.
Wow. So even in the autonomous principalities, Kurdish wasn't necessarily the language of government.
Often not, no. Persian or Turkish might still be used for official business.
It really underscores the power dynamics, language as a key to influence. But did Kurds writing in these other languages actually make significant contributions? Or were they just assimilating?
No, they made massive contributions. It wasn't just assimilation, it was active participation, shaping those traditions.
Okay, like in Arabic.
Major figures. Ibn al-Athir, one of the greatest medieval Muslim historians, Abu al-Fida, historian, geographer, and Ayyubid prince himself, al-Sharazuri, a key philosopher and historian of philosophy, Zayn al-Din al-Iraqi, a giant in hadith studies.
And Saladin.
Saladin himself, founder of the Ayyubid dynasty, was Kurdish. His administration ran on Arabic. These weren't minor players, they were central figures.
Clearly. What about in Persian?
Also huge. Idris Bitlisi, a top Ottoman official, wrote a major history of the early sultans in Persia. Shraf Khan Bitlisi, the prince of Bitlis, wrote the Sharafnama, the foundational history of the Kurds in Persian.
Writing Kurdish history in Persian? Interesting.
Yeah. Shows Persian's prestige. We also had poets like Sharif Zan writing in both Persian and Kurmanji, and Mastori Ardalan writing history and poetry in both Persian and Gurani. Plus, the influence of Persian on Kurdish poets like Sidiri is undeniable. Deep engagement.
So deeply woven into the Persian literary world, too. And Ottoman Turkish.
As Turkish rose, Kurds contributed there, too. The Sharifnama, being translated into Ottoman Turkish in the 17th century, twice, actually, commissioned by Kurdish courts, shows that shift.
Using Turkish to access their own history.
Kind of, yeah. Later, you get figures like Ziya Gökalp, a key ideologue of Turkish nationalism in the early 20th century, who had Kurdish roots, though his relationship with that identity is complex. Many other bilingual Kurds contributed to Turkish literature.
So it's a story of deep integration and contribution across the region's major languages.
Absolutely. The push towards writing primarily in Kurdish came later, really gathering steam with modern Kurdish nationalism.
Fascinating. Okay, let's broaden out again. Kurdistan is a linguistic melting pot. How has Kurdish interacted with its other neighbors over time, like minority languages within Kurdistan?
That's another crucial layer. Given the geography, multilingualism has always been the norm. The key contact languages, besides the big three, were Aramaic Syriac, and especially the modern Neo-Aramaic dialects, and Armenian.
And this contact led to mutual influence, borrowing.
Definitely. The interaction between Kurdish and Eastern Neo-Aramaic, spoken by Syrian Christians and formerly Jewish communities, is incredibly deep. Maybe 2,500 years or more of contact.
Wow. What kind of influence?
Research shows profound, often asymmetrical influence from Kurdish onto Neo-Aramaic.
Kurdish influencing Aramaic.
Yes, heavily. Affecting vocabulary, sure, but also core grammar, word order, how cases are marked. In many areas, Kurdish seems to have been the dominant local vernacular.
An Aramaic influence on Kurdish.
Less studied, but it's their loan words, maybe some shared features. You even find shared proverbs pointing to really close cultural mingling.
A really deep entanglement. What about Kurdish and Armenian?
Also significant. especially in historical Western Armenia, Eastern Anatolia. Widespread bilingualism.
Influence going both ways.
Seems so. Armenian likely influenced Kurmanji dialects in contact zones, vocabulary sounds, maybe even word formation. Some suggest Armenian might be a substrate in areas Kurds moved into.
Meaning the earlier language leaves traces on the incoming one.
Exactly. Kurdish influence on Armenian seems more lexical, vocabulary borrowing. But there are also hints of deeper, older links, maybe via Parthian influencing classical Armenian syntax way back.
Layers upon layers of contact. And then the big three again, Arabic, Persian, Turkish.
Massive borrowing into Kurdish from them, of course. Arabic for religious, scholarly terms, even affecting sounds. Persian influence is pervasive administration, literature, daily life, given the close linguistic relationship and cultural prestige. Turkish influence is strongest on Kurmanji in Turkey, vocabulary, and some grammar.
So Kurdish absorbed a lot from the powerful neighbors.
Yes, but it seems to have exerted a more profound structural influence on the minority languages within Kurdistan, like Neo-Aramaic and regional Armenian.
Interesting dynamic. Reflects local power balances, perhaps?
Probably. Kurdish often functioned as the dominant regional vernacular, even under larger empires.
Okay, we've covered so much ground, origins, dialects, writing, scripts, contact. Can we try to synthesize this chronologically? A quick historical overview of spoken and written languages among Kurds.
Let's try. Ancient pre-Islamic times, before, say, 7th century CE.
Okay.
Ancestors likely shift from unknown non-Iranian languages to northwestern Iranian dialects. Contact with Aramaic. Any writing is in imperial languages. No written Kurdish evidence.
Got it. Early Islamic medieval, 7th to 15th centuries.
Arabic rises. Religion, admin. Persian rises. Literature, admin. Kurdish dialects, spoken. Elites write in Arabic Persian. Crucially, written Gorani emerges. Yarsani. Maybe early hints of Kurmanji poetry, Yazidi texts. Kurdish Armenian contact grows.
Okay. Then the principalities, Ottoman Safavid era, 16th, 18th centuries.
Kurdish dialects spoken. Arabic, Persian, Ottoman, Turkish written by elites.
Right.
But this is the flowering of vernacular literature. Kurtan, still prestigious, Shahnameh written in it. Yeah. Turkish gains ground. Maybe Yazidi script used too.
Right, the classical period. Then the 19th century, principalities decline.
Yes, more centralization.
But
big rise of Sarani literature, Nali school in Sulaymaniyah, using Perso-Arabic. First Kurdish newspapers appear. Elites still write in imperial languages, too. European scholars start studying Kurdish.
And finally, 20th century to today, division of Kurdistan.
Big divergences. Turkey-Syria, suppression. But Kurmanji adopts Latin Hawar alphabet. Modern prose develops, often in exile.
Okay, Iraq.
Sarani gets official status, using adapted Perso-Arabic. Becomes language of education, media. Modern Sarani lit thrives. Kurmanji, Bidini, also recognized.
Iran.
Persian dominates. Kurdish widely spoken. Sarani, southern, Lakhio Gorani. Limited publications in Perso-Arabic script, notably during the short-lived Mahabad Republic. Restrictions continue.
And the former USSR.
Kurmanji literary tradition develops there, using Armenian, then Latin, then Cyrillic scripts. Notable writers like Areb Shemo, Hishya Sindhi.
So completely different paths depending on the state.
Exactly. Today, you see ongoing efforts to standardize Kurmanji and Sarani, the Latin script spreading online, continued multilingualism, and efforts to revitalize Zazaki and Gorani. The political fragmentation has shaped everything.
It really paints a picture of incredible resilience, but also immense challenges tied to that political reality. A dynamic, often difficult history reflected right there in the languages.
Absolutely. That timeline shows the constant dance between spoken vernaculars, the emergence of writing, political forces, cultural prestige, and Kurdish identity itself.
Well, this has been an incredibly rich deep dive. If we had to sum up the key takeaways, Kurdish isn't one thing. It's a diverse group of Iranian languages.
Right, with a history marked by a long oral tradition alongside using regional prestige languages for writing.
And distinct Kurdish written traditions emerged later in different dialects like Kurmanji, Gorani, and Sarani, tied to specific places and times, leading to multiple literary forms and scripts.
And all along, deep language contact shaped Kurdish and its neighbors, both borrowing and influencing.
It's this complex interplay, isn't it? Linguistic evolution, political history, cultural pull, religious identity, social factors, all mixed together.
That's a perfect summary.
And looking forward, the challenges continue. Standardization, language rights, revitalization, all playing out against that complicated geopolitical backdrop. The story's definitely not over.
Not at all. Which maybe leaves us with a final thought for our listeners.
Go for it.
Think about how this Kurdish story, the spoken diversity, versus the written traditions, the influence of power and identity reflects a broader human experience. How many other language communities have faced similar histories? What can we learn by comparing these journeys?
That's a great point. It encourages looking beyond just this one case.
Yeah. Maybe explore those linguistic maps of the Middle East, or even seek out translations of some of the poets we mentioned, Zeni, Tsitsiri, Nali. There's a whole world there.